Today's episode is sponsored by Umore. Umore helps us better understand and uplift our mental health with instant screening, data tracking, insights, and targeted exercises. I've had the pleasure of having both co-founders on the podcast, and I really admire what they do and love their vision behind the company. Umore is the AI-powered mental well-being tracker that helps you build positive habits, change behaviors, and share your progress with friends, family, and physicians. Umore's vision is to make mental health as seamless and as accessible as possible. Its purpose is to act as a support and prevention tool and to provide you with the data and insights to help you develop an awareness of your current mental state and stress levels. The way it works is very simple. You download the app for free on your smartphone. You fill in a quick questionnaire that will assess how you're currently feeling, which will act as a starting point, and it will check in with you daily to track your well-being over time and so that you are able to see your progression day by day. Umore also gives you access to many evidence-based exercises which are designed to help you live your happiest and healthiest life. The goal of Umore is to be your friend, is there to help and support you in your mental health journey. And to find out more, you can check out their website at umore.app. Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Zimar Dajani. Zimar is a solicitor, property investor, author, and divorce and breakup coach. After her experience going through two divorces, she decided to become a certified divorce coach and make it her mission to help and support other professional women who are going through divorce. Her book, From Breakup to Empowerment, shares her divorce stories and provides readers with the critical lessons she learned to make the divorce process as smooth as possible and to help prepare for life after divorce. During this episode, we discuss the different cultural perspectives surrounding divorce. We talk about the biggest misconceptions people have regarding marriage and divorce, and how we can reinvent and prepare ourselves for life after divorce. And the last message she wanted to share is your mess can be turned into power, and everything can be turned into positive, no matter how bad it is. Please welcome to the show, Miss Zimar Dajani.
Thank you. Thank you, Tarada. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. So, Zimar, me and you actually got in contact through my mom, actually, and she was telling me about the work that you do as a breakup and divorce coach, and I thought that is really interesting because, number one, like love, marriage, relationships, divorce, like that area is something I love to talk about because I find it very, very interesting. And I've had relationship coaches on the show before, but I've never really discussed the divorce side. Everything was all about, you know, how to be in a relationship, how to build a relationship, but no one really talked about how to handle a divorce. What's the mindset behind it? How can we get over it? And I think the work that you do is going to shed a new light on a lot of things that maybe not just myself but the audience might be curious about when it comes to divorce. But before we get into everything, Zimar, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself and we'll take it from there.
So first and foremost, I'm a single mom to two daughters, so and they are, you know, my why. So they are the reason why I do everything in life. So they're my driving force. So I've been divorced twice, and I didn't let the divorce define me. Actually, after each divorce, I reinvented my life. And we can talk about that in more detail. So after my first, before my first divorce, I used to work in advertising. And I did that for a few years. And then after my first divorce, I actually went to law school. So I trained as a lawyer, became a solicitor. And until now, I'm still training. I'm still working as a solicitor. So I have over 20 years experience as a solicitor. And then after my second divorce, I wrote a book about my divorce journey and I became a certified divorce coach. So that's, in a nutshell, is a little bit about my background.
Yeah. No, awesome. And thank you so much for sharing that with us. I love how I would have hoped that there would have been no divorces, obviously, but I love how after each one, you didn't let that define you and you completely reinvented your life, your career, and look where it's gotten you today. So that's amazing. You know, I don't think that's not always the stories you hear after a divorce. It's refreshing to see that someone actually, you know, didn't let it, you know, be that, define them. I love that word as you used to define them.
Yeah. I mean, obviously divorce is a taboo, especially in our culture.
Yeah, and, for sure.
For me to get divorced twice and still keep my head up high, you know, I mean, some people think, oh, how do you do that, you know, because you should be ashamed, you should feel guilty, you should feel like a failure, you know, because you know, like once is enough, but twice, and you're still going, you know, you're still, you know, you're showing up. You're not shying away from even talking about it. So, yeah, and I still face that even today. I still, you know, face such negative comments from even, you know, family members. So, you know, they're like, you know, don't talk about it. You know, you know, and I was like, no, you know, that's not how I see it. I see it as a chance to actually shed some light into, you know, how people can actually move on from a negative relationship that they're in, you know, and they shouldn't be stuck if they're really unhappy. I mean, again, we can talk about more, you know, about this later on.
Yeah. Don't worry, we're gonna get into everything. But since you've opened up this topic, I guess we'll go there first. First of all, I totally understand what you're talking about when it comes to how it's perceived, in especially as in our culture as Arabs. You know, like I get it. You know, I hear the stories. I have friends that have been, you know, divorced already, unfortunately, but. There still is, although it's more accepted today than it probably was before, there still is, you know, a big stigma, and like that should be the last resort and so on, you know, try. And then, okay, if it gets to that point, you know, khalas, just go your separate ways. What I think is interesting is that different cultures have different perceptions of marriage and divorce. For example, if we're looking at us versus, you know, maybe the more Western society, maybe like the States, divorces, you know, whatever. It's just, okay, yeah, I got a divorce. It's cool. It's not as heavy, I think. And I guess the question becomes is, how do you manage? Because the different cultures are going to affect the way, I guess, you not only think about divorce, but the way, if you are getting divorced, are going to go through it. So could you tell me a little bit about a model, or like a mindset or a framework to think about that can go across, you know, cultures and barriers? Or is it really specific to, you have to manage the situation based on where you're from and the culture you're in and society and so on?
Yeah, I mean, culture is a huge part of it. Obviously, the Arab culture and the Asian culture are a little bit similar, but you cannot compare our culture to the Western one. So, you know, especially because the Arab culture has a very strong family ties, you know. So, you know, most of the West, I mean, I don't like generalizing, but, you know, they don't have as strong family ties as we do, you know. I mean... And also, from my personal experience, my family is very, very close-knit. So, you know, it's not something that you decide without, you know, talking to your family members. And getting their support is very, very important. And I was very blessed to have my parents' support from you know, day one in both marriages. So you know, so the family dynamics, you know, it really is important. I'm not saying that in the West they don't have that, you know, many do, but from my experience, it's not as close-knit as our culture. I mean, you know, like for instance, in my family, especially me, like when I was growing up, you know, it was understood that I will not move out of the house until I get married.
Sounds about right.
So this is unheard of in Western culture. Like, no, you know, when you go to college, that's it. You're free. You're independent. You don't go back to your parents' house. So these small dynamics, you know, they're cultural differences that, you know, you and I understand because we're both, you know, from the same background. But having said that, my older daughter broke these barriers. Like when she went to college, she actually went to a college in a different city, so she had to live there, you know. And for us, it's like it was a big shock, you know, to absorb. But you know, we knew that, you know, I knew that I could not, you know, say no to her, because you know, she got into one of the top universities in England, and she got into the degree that she wanted to do. And after that, she actually lived, you know, with her friends afterwards, like after she graduated. My parents, you know, at that point, like, you know, how can you let her? Like, you know, she's, you know, she's too young to live by herself. And, you know, why can't she live with you? You have a, you know, you have a big house, you know, she can have her own, even like, she even could have had her own summer house. Cause yeah. I have a summer house in the garden. Like, she could have her independence, you know, like even like, you're not in the same building, but, you know, it's like, no, you know, she wants her independence and I can understand that. And, you know, I mean, that was it, you know. So yeah. Even in our family dynamics, you know, we've evolved and we've, you know, become more westernized in a way and more open to understanding, you know, that when you're living in Western country, you have to adapt. You can't remain 100%, you know, working on your old family values,
yeah,
or traditions. I think not values, traditions, you know. And there's a fine balance between trying to, you know, continue your family values, which should not change, but you can adapt your traditions, you know, to suit whatever works for you. So, you know. Sorry, I went off a tangent.
It's fine. That's what these conversations are all about. Yeah. I like tangents.
So I think your question was about mindset and culture. Mm. So the mindset part applies universally.
Okay.
So wherever you are, you need a really strong mindset.
Yeah.
And part of my coaching program, the first step in my coaching program is working on the mindset. Because even before you start the divorce process, you have to make sure that you are grounded and that you understand where you're going before you even start the process. And you need to also ensure that you have you're very clear about why you're doing what you're doing, and you're not using your emotions to, you know, to move you forward. You have to actually use you know, your mind, you know, your logic, and try to put your emotions on the side. I know it's easier said than done, but, you know, with coaching, this is, you know, a big part of what I do, you know, tap into your mind and try to, you know, dial down like the negative emotions that you're feeling, because going through a divorce is a very traumatic experience, you know,
I can imagine.
With or without a coach,
yeah.
With or without a coach, it's very traumatic. But, you know, there are lots of tools that you can use that will lessen the trauma and that will also shorten the amount of time that you will go through a divorce. You know, so instead of going through a 2-3 year divorce process, you can do it in a few months. If you follow the system, and if, you know, obviously there's lots of variables that come into play, but it's possible, because I did it myself.
Yeah. I think what you said is really, really interesting regarding, first of all, mindset. I get that completely. I think, like you said, divorce can be a very traumatic experience. Lots of emotions besides all the additional details, like, you know, finances, assets, children, family. Like, there's, it's not just, oh, me and you are getting, you know, a divorce. It's a separation, mm-hmm, of, yeah, so many aspects of, well, that are a part of your life, and how do you move forward, and how do you balance that, and how do you negotiate that? And when you said there's a lot of tools out there, I think there's always a lot of tools, but maybe we don't always use them, or we don't know which one is the right one to use for us. But I know your first divorce took 2 years, and it was very traumatic, and it was a very, very, what's the word? Very rough, I guess.
It was an ugly divorce, yes.
And but then in your second divorce was a lot smoother, from the sounds of it, at least from what I've read and listened to from your work. I really wanted to talk to you today for two main reasons. Number one, I think the work you do is very interesting. Number two is, maybe three. I think that So a close friend of mine recently went through a very hectic divorce as well, and it took 3 years or something, and it was just, I saw what it, you know, I saw how much it affected him, you know, mentally. It was just, it was really hard, you know, for me to just sit on the side and, you know, watch. But again, you're not in it, so you can't really relate. And number three is, I'm about to get married, so I'm like, okay, I'm probably, my perception at the moment of marriage is probably naive compared to the actual what it actually means, you know, to be married. Because I'm a hopeless romantic. In my mind, it's, you know, one person, that's it, you've made your choice, this is it. So like, in my mind, at least Khaled of now can't imagine the world in a different way. But of course, reality is completely different, and I get that. So the question I wanted to ask you about is, so let's, because in my mind, you pick the person you're going to get married to. You guys get married, there's a lot of, you know, love, there's a lot of positivity, there's a lot, Khaled, you know, you've made that commitment to each other. In my mind, what I don't understand at the moment is, how does it go from that to divorce? You know, what is that like? I would love to hear from you. What was it, events? Was it experiences? Was it conversation? Like, what, like, I can't see the trail to get to that stage. So I'd love to hear from you, your experiences in both. And how did it go from, you know, that, like, the, like, love and marriage or whatever, to, like, to get there? Because at the moment, I don't understand it. So I'd love to hear, because I think it would give me a new perspective on things.
Yeah, but in general, I can say, that people change, you know. So this is one factor that, you know, you enter into a relationship with one idea, and then maybe one person grows and the other person doesn't grow.
Okay.
So there's a mismatch of ambitions and goals and where you want to be and what you want to do. That's one example.
Okay.
Another example is rushing into a marriage, so not really knowing each other very well.
Okay, could we dive in on this point a little bit more? Because I think nowadays, from the people, at least from my age group and what I've seen around me, I've seen many people get married and then get, you know, a year, 2 years later, they're divorced. And so when you say rushing in, and you really need to, without fully knowing the person, what now, given your experience, what do you feel like I need to know this about this person before I make this decision?
I mean, a very simple advice I give my friends, even my clients, my friends, is that you need to know someone at least during the four seasons, you know, so at least a whole year. And
I like
because
that.
Different people react to different seasons, you know, like some people are, you know, they love the summer, so they're you see them in their best shape during the summer. But in the winter, they may be miserable because they don't like the cold. Just one simple example. Another one is you need to have a few arguments while you're, you know, courting each other and maybe even during your engagement. If you have no arguments, it means you haven't really dug deep enough into your relationship, because, you know, every marriage has ups and downs. There's no marriage without any arguments or any hiccups. You know, if anyone tells you otherwise, they're lying, you know. So even the best couples in the world will have arguments, but it's how you deal with the arguments. How do you actually solve the problems? And this is a big big point that most couples don't even experience when they're going out and, you know, courting or even during their engagement, because they only want to show the best side of each other. And when they're married, you know, it's, you know, life is, you know, is not all roses, you know. I mean, you know, you may get fired from your job, you know, you may get an illness, one of your family members may have a traumatic experience that you have to deal with, you know, and no one really knows what's going to happen in the future. So there's no like crystal ball where you can say, okay, you know, if this happens, this is how I'm going to react. If this happens, this is how I'm going to react. And so my, you know, another advice is make sure that you have at least three big arguments before you get married, and see how you deal with it, you know, like, because also personality is also come into play. So You know, there's different personality types. So if someone is a leader and the other person is also a leader, you're going to clash, you know?
Yeah.
So you need to have compatible personalities. Or if you don't have compatible personalities, at least you have to have a roadmap of how to manage each other's expectations and emotions, especially if you're on the same, you know, if you have a similar personality. And also, it's about really having good communications. You know, a lot of times, like when something really upsets you, especially in the beginning of a relationship, you don't express it. You keep it inside. Of, okay, it's you know, I'll forget about that. You know, it's a one off. You know, I don't need to make a big deal. But these small things can you know. Pile up, and then something trivial may happen, and then you'll blow up, you know, and you're like, well, where did that come from? It's because you didn't deal with the initial problem from the beginning, and then one small problem added to another small problem, you know, and then even a trivial issue can become something that you will walk out of the house for, you know. So it's very important to deal with issues there and then. Never go to bed before solving a problem, you know, whether you're going out with someone or whether you're married, you know, or even in a family relationship, you know, like I have this rule with my daughters, you know, if there's anything that upsets them from me, we have to resolve it before we go to bed. And vice versa, if anything upsets me from them, we have to resolve it before we go to bed. Otherwise, it festers and it gets worse and it becomes more difficult to deal with and handle because, you know, your emotions are not logical, you know, and your mind can, you know, go miles further than what really happens. So, you know, yeah, these are my main tips.
First of all, they're fantastic tips. I'm listening to each one. I'm like, yep, I know that one. Yep, I relate to that one. Yep. The last one, especially, I think that is khaled all over. I love what you said about.
I just remembered one more thing.
Yeah, please,
sorry.
Go ahead.
Money is a very big thing. Mm. So how do you deal with money? You know, I mean, you have to actually sit down with your partner, your fiance, and make sure that you have the same money.
Habits.
What's the word?
Habits.
Not just habits, but how you manage money.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, and what money means to you. Like some people are great savers and some people are great spenders and some people do not know how to budget and other people, don't like spending money. You know, they always think of, you know, I need to save money for the rainy day, but that could become, you know, almost an addiction. Like, you know, they cannot spend money because they're always worried of not having enough money when they need it. And then they're not enjoying their life because of that. So you need to make sure that you have similar money. What's the word? I'm trying to think of the word. Expectations, maybe.
Sure.
You know, like,
yeah.
And like, you know, for instance, you know, do you see yourself in 5 years' time living in what kind of living standards? And you need to discuss this with your partner. So, you know, having similar goals, not just for now, but in 5, 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And also another thing, apart from money, is also obviously children. You know, like, how are you going to raise your kids? What kind of upbringing are you going to be, having with them? Is it going to be purely, you know, the same way that you were raised by your family? Or is it going to be a combination of your family upbringing and her family upbringing? Or are you going to create a new, you know, new tradition, you know, from scratch? And yeah, so I mean, these are things that just came to mind.
No, but they're very important things, you know. I don't know why what you said at the beginning, you know, you need to see someone through the four seasons. I love that. I think it really at least gave me like a clearer idea of like what you meant and the different times, like different times of life and experiences and so on and different situations that you have to manage with your partner. I think that I guess one of the ones that maybe personally I struggle with the most is the third one you talked about dealing with the problem there and then. Now, so me and my fiance are very different when it comes to these things. She is more of in the moment now, like let's get it done, like whatever. And I'm more of the kind of person that, because I have been the kind of person in the past where I wouldn't say anything about the little things, then I would blow up, and then you know my ex would be like, "What's going? Like, whoa, 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 where did this come from?" And like, I have a list that I'd like run down that I'd like saved. If I'm honest with
myself, that's the worst you can do, because
yeah,
you know,
I know.
It's around the other person, because you know, but yeah,
I 100% agree with you. It is not fair on the other person, because they're getting an attack of, and it could be like you said, the smallest thing, but it accumulates, and when you don't deal with it then and there, it could become something a lot bigger that it doesn't need to become. So she's a there and then person. I will be honest here. I won't try to pretend anything. I still maybe do have some of my those old habits a little bit. I'm much better than I was before, but also, I'm a person that if something bothers me, it's like, in our relationship, I like to like take time to process it myself, to think about what has happened, why is it making me feel this way, what should I like, how should I react, is this something that's going to continue, is what, and then after I've like had my processing time, then I come to a decision. I'm like, is this worth discussing further, or am I comfortable with it? Comfortable with it now. Doesn't always work, I'll say that, yeah, for sure.
It sounds like you're an analyzer, so which is what I am as well. So yeah. Analyzers do take their time. They don't react right away, because they like to process things before they even open their mouth. So
yeah,
I can relate to that. Yeah,
yeah, because like the way I see it, at least, is if I answer you now, right now, it might not be exactly what I think or what I feel or whatever. It'll be impulsive. It'll be instinctive. I'm just going to react instead of thinking it through. So after I go through that process and I do bring it up, you'll know that, or I know for sure that this is exactly like what's going on. And this is exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'd like to actually ask you about is when, In our example, one is, you know, immediate, one's a bit later. Finding that balance can sometimes be a bit tricky. Obviously, it's a work. It's always going to be a work in progress. And sometimes I'll have to come, you know, deal with things faster. And sometimes she'll have to let things maybe take longer. But what are you like when two people are kind of opposites and how they deal with things like that? What advice would you have for that? I'm curious.
Okay. I mean, the starting point is you both need to be calm when you have a discussion.
Yeah.
So if one of you is really agitated, you could say, listen, I'd like to park this for now, but we can discuss this in, say, an hour or so. You know, you can go for a walk, you know, clear your mind, get some fresh air. And then you can, because you're an analyzer, you can actually then analyze what happened. And then when you come back, you're in a much, you know, better emotional state than you were at the time. Because you should never react when you're really upset, because, you know,
it's never good.
That's when things can get you know, from bad to worse in an instant. And it's difficult to move away from that, you know, so it's difficult to fix that. So especially if you use, you know, harsh words and you hurt the other person's feelings, then, you know, it's difficult to unwind that. So that's the first point. Second point is you need to know what each other's trigger points are. So if someone's love, different people have different love,
languages.
No, I'm trying to think of the word. Okay, we could say languages, love languages. So some people are more tactile, like, you know, if they're upset, you know, hugging them will actually help diffuse a problem. Other people are more verbal. So, you know, if they hear like loving words, then that will diffuse the problem. Other people are more, writing, like if you write them a note or give them a card or express your feelings in writing, then that will, you know, help them, you know, feel better. Others, you know, just by, I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of, you know, of permutations, but you need to know what each of your love language is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's another point. So that when you upset the other person, you have to then use their love language to get to their side.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If they upset you, then they have to use your love language to get to your side.
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. I think something that I didn't think about until you just said it was trigger points, because it made me start thinking like, what are mine? What are hers? I don't know if I'm 100% sure, but I'm going to do some digging and find out. So thank you for that.
Yeah, anytime.
I wanted to come back to the whole marriage and divorce thing. So I think that a lot of people... it would be very understandable and very acceptable that after you've gone through a divorce, no matter maybe how traumatic it was, or maybe that does play a factor, I don't know. Well, maybe you can tell us a bit more, that you think like, oh, you know what? Like, I never want to get married again. Khalas, that like image of marriage has been, you know, shattered. So I guess the question...
I'm living proof that no, yeah, that's not the case.
Yeah, I understand. I completely do. That's why I wanted to get. Did you feel that way at any point? Maybe after the, I don't know, but probably the second one. It sounds like, you know, you've made leaps and bounds compared to, like, you know, who you were and your mindset and everything as a person from the first. But did the first one not affect your perception at all? And what advice would you have to people who are like, yep, marriage doesn't work. That's it. Never again.
I am very similar to you in terms of, I'm also complete, you know, hopeless romantic. So I always think, you know, there's someone out there for me, you know, whether I find him today or find him next year, I'll find him, you know, and he will find me.
Yeah.
So that's a starting point. You know, whether it's going to take me, you know, another marriage or two, doesn't matter. You know, I will end up with my, you know, soul partner at some point.
Yeah.
From my first divorce, actually, because that time I was in my 20s, you know, so I was really, really young, and I had Dania at the time, so she's my first daughter, and she was a year old when I got divorced, so I, you know,
I was very young.
It was, yeah, I mean, for me it was like, you know, there's no way I always felt like I will remarry at some point, which I did, you know. I mean, it took me a few years to find my my second husband for various reasons. But in a way, it actually was good that I had, you know, 9 years, well, 8 years worth of, you know, being 100% for Dania. You know, it was just me and her. Obviously, we had my parents' support all the way. You know, I mean, they're like her second parents.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Until now, you know. So, but I felt privileged that I had this one-on-one time with her before I remarried. So, you know, like I always say, everything happens for a reason. So, you know. Those 8 years, you know, obviously, you know, she grew to become a 9-year-old, but also it gave me the chance to, you know, to grow myself, you know, because I felt like I married really young. You know, I was too young when I got married. Actually, I got married a week after my graduation. So it's like, you know, I had no time, you know, to discover myself and discover what I want, and you know, so you know, that's why I said don't rush into marriage, you know. Take your time. Obviously, I didn't follow up that advice in my first marriage. You know, I was so keen to get married, and you know, anyway, you know, there's no, I mean, like I said, you know, you learn from your mistakes,
of course.
So that was my biggest mistake, that I rushed into my marriage. However, there's no regrets, because I, you know, that marriage produced Dania. So, you know, like I said, you know, everything has a silver lining, and she's the biggest silver lining, you know, that I have. from the marriage.
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost track. What was the question?
It was about divorce change your perception of marriage?
Okay. Yeah. So, like I said, in my first divorce, I knew that I wanted to remarry, but you know, it took a long time. After my second divorce, again, the healing process was much shorter than the first one. Because I already had the experience. I knew, you know, what to expect. And still, you know, even after my second divorce, people were asking me also, are you done now with marriage? I was like, no, I'm not actually, you know, if someone suitable comes along and we know each other well enough and long enough, I'm open to it. And I still am open to it, you know? But I've learned my lessons. So I will not do things that didn't serve me before.
Yeah.
Which are some of the stuff that we mentioned before, like, you know, taking your time, going through, you know, at least 1 year, no long distance relationships. Again, that's another lesson, because both of my marriages were long distance.
Ooh, I can imagine that's quite challenging.
Yeah. And again, because it's long distance, you know, you don't really know the person, because you see them like, you know, on, you know, holidays, and, you know, they come visit you for a few days, you go visit them for a few days. And it's not really, you know, it's not really the right way to get to know someone. So yeah, that's my answer.
Okay.
Definitely, I will never say no to marriage.
I love that.
If someone is suitable.
I love that.
And no one should. I mean, I know people in their 60s, 70s, even 80s getting married. You know, it's never too late to get married.
Yeah. So, first of all, I love that you still have that perspective, and from one hopeless romantic to another, it makes me feel good. It means that I'm on the right track, at least. At least I believe so.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
I wanted to dive in a little bit more into the lessons, because you said in each, you learned from each, you know, each marriage, I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons, you learned a lot about yourself. And like you just said, you learned not to repeat maybe the same patterns or the same things you were doing before when you meet the next person and so on. So I guess, what have you, in your experience, what have you learned about marriage that I guess maybe you can only know after being in it and going through it, that maybe someone, for example, like myself, who is not married, wouldn't know or wouldn't have experienced that? Like, what advice would you have for people for looking to get married?
Marriage is a business. I mean, some people may get shocked with that, but marriage is a business. You have to have the right foundations to make it successful. So when I say business, I mean, you know, to have a successful business, you need to have a good structure. So you need to have clear understanding of your role, each other's roles, you know, like, what are your obligations? What are her obligations? Mm-hmm. It's like having a JV agreement, like a JV partner, mm-hmm. you know, so each person's roles have to be very clear and specified. You need to understand, you need to have like a dispute resolution. So if things don't go right, you know, how do you actually solve the problem? So again, like a contract, you don't go to arbitration, you actually sit together in a room, and whatever method you decide to do, you implement that so that you can solve the problem and move on. Also, marriage has lots of ups and downs, and a lot of it has to do with money. I mean, most divorces that I've helped on, you know, either are related to money issues or infidelity issues.
Yeah.
Fidelity, you know, this is a complete different subject, but for money issues, you know, it's very important to have budgets, you know, so you actually have to talk to each other and agree budgets on everything, you know, not just now, but also like, you know, okay, when we have kids, are we going to send them to, you know, private schools or state schools? I know in Dubai, probably you don't have state schools, but like in England, you know, you do.
Yeah.
Are we going to give them, you know, total freedom to decide what they want to do, or are we going to try to, you know, influence them into going into certain areas of careers or of interests? You know, like, what if your son wants to dance ballet? Are you okay with that? You know, I mean, there's 101, you know, questions that you need to ask each other and make sure that you're both on the same page.
Yeah.
Especially before you start having kids, because once you have kids, you know, it's too late.
Yeah.
It's too late. You know, you cannot undo that. You know, kids, you know, you have kids to look after and they're your, you know, they're there for life.
Yeah.
So you need to make sure that you're both on the same page before you start having a family.
Yeah. I think, I love that analogy. I don't think no one's ever said it in that way. You know, marriage is like a business, because when you put it in that framework, it makes a lot more sense. Because running business, you know, like you said, you need the foundation. What's the strategy? What's the budget? What's the plans? What's the processes? What's the communication lines? Like, all of these things make it so much more relatable. I love that analogy. I'm gonna steal it from you, so I apologize from now.
That's fine.
I really like what you said about how, you know, there's a lots of ups and downs, and there's a lot of things that need to be discussed and addressed and so on before you have kids. Because I, you know, I have friends around me that have started having kids and stuff, and so I've always wanted kids. For example, I always and I do want kids, but like I've seen like my not only my friends but my cousins, and I've seen how it's changed their life completely. And I'm like, and I look at it and the amount of work and how it, from my perspective, I'm just tired like watching them. So I'm like, I can't even imagine when I have my own, like, what am I gonna do? I can't imagine. I don't know how, like, my parents did it four times. I'm like, how did you do this four times from like baby to like us again? I don't know. I guess we'll find out when that time comes. But one thing I wanted to touch on a little bit is, so I've been having, Zamar, this debate for years with a particular friend of mine. The whole concept of marriage. So let me explain the debate. On his side, he believes that all marriage is a like a piece of paper that you get that like from the government that says, you know, that kind of bring like kind of adds this whole other thing when like finances, like all that. It doesn't affect his viewpoint is marriage shouldn't affect the relationship you have. What do I mean by that? I believe, for example, that because he thinks that you can have the love, you can have the respect, you can have the kids, you can have everything that you have in a marriage without being married. So being getting married is just a formality, you know. He doesn't believe that it should have an effect on the relationship. Myself, on the other hand, I'm on the complete, you know, other side. Is I fully understand what he's saying. I understand it, but I believe that marriage is a like using his example. I can have all these things. That's fine, but I don't know how to put it into words. I think, but marriage is like a deeper level of commitment, because in his example, you can have all those things, but you can get up and walk away whenever you want. You know, there's no, you wouldn't need to think twice. But I think when you're married and the additional, I guess, commitments, both, you know, not just financially, but like even between the two of you, there's a bigger risk that comes with that, but that's what makes it beautiful as well. You know, I believe that marriage, you're taking the person as is with all the risks involved. You know, if you really, I believe if you this you think this is the person, then you take it with everything that comes. There shouldn't be a get out of jail free card, at least not in that's not what I think. But what are your thoughts? Because I really don't know. I see his side, but I have my own side.
Okay, I mean, the starting point is obviously, as a Muslim, you cannot have a relationship and have kids outside of marriage, you know.
Sure.
So that's a starting point. I don't know where your friend is from, but anyway, that's I'm not judging anyone.
Yeah.
However, for me, marriage is sacred, you know. I mean, I'm a very firm believer in marriage. I'm a firm believer in God as well. And I feel that if you have kids out of wedlock, you know, I feel like the commitment is not there from the two parties. So from the, you know, the guy and the girl. I know that a lot of people think that, oh, marriage is just like an institution.
Yes.
And it's, you know, and
yes.
why do we have to get this piece of paper to prove that we, you know, we are married? I mean, Islamically, you know, you can get married, you know, going to a sheikh and getting the kapil tab.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need a civil marriage. So I'm not sure if this is what your friend is referring to, that you're just getting the, you know, the religious one is enough instead of going for the civil one as well. I'm not sure if this is what you're referring to or completely living, you know, without any kind of marriage.
Yeah, it's the latter. It's not in our discussions. It's never ignoring, you know, religion, ignoring all like that. That kind of stuff is just the, you know, the essence. You know, we're just comparing the situation, like two different perspectives, two different situations, irrespective of all the other things that of course are important and play into that. But if we strip everything away and we're going to look at these two examples, and they're very similar. One is without, you can have everything without and everything's fine. And on my side, I'm like, yes, you can have everything without, but when you have it with, when you do get married, it does add another layer of complexity and commitment to the relationship. That's just my perspective. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not just complexity and commitment. It's also rights. Like if you're not actually married and you separate and you have kids, there's nothing. You know whatever court you go to, you have no rights. I mean, in England, you know, people who are in civil marriages, which basically means, you know, they're living together as a couple but without getting married. If they separate and they have kids, you know, they don't split their assets because they're not married. They're treated as separate individuals. So, like, even if they bought the, you know, the property together, they're not treated as a married couple. So, you know, basically, you know, it's very, very messy because there's no laws to protect them, because the laws are only made for married people, not for, you know, people living as a couple without this, you know, added layer, if you want to call it that, of commitment.
Yeah. From your perspective, it's more about, at least from what I've understood, is the I guess if we're looking at those two examples, the biggest differentiating factor is the rights that come with being married. And those rights are there to protect both of you, you know, should things, you know, not work out.
Protect both of you and also protect the kids, because you know, if you do separate and one of you earns more than the other person, and if whatever reason that person, you know, washes their hands out of their financial obligations to their kids, which happens a lot, by the way, especially if there's an affair, the kids are left with nothing.
Mm.
And their mom can do nothing about that because she wasn't married to their dad.
That's very
so everyone gets affected, not just the you know, the couple.
Yeah. Okay, I get that. I guess I didn't think of it from a legality standpoint and so on. I guess in my mind I will still fight him, even though what's funny is he just got married, so it's hilarious, but he still has these beliefs, but so it's very funny. But I think still got a couple more battles with him to go through to go through on this point. You mentioned in one of the on a podcast you were on, the divorce podcast, I think it was, I can't remember, you said you discussed how the whole ecosystem is unjust when it comes to divorce. And when you were talking about, I can't remember if you were talking about, are you talking about a specific, it's unjust in a specific country or place, or globally the system is unjust and it can, and in some places it's more favorable for the woman and in other places is more favorable for the man?
I mean, I was talking in terms of the English system, because that's where I got divorced first time.
Yeah.
And also that's, I mean, a lot of my clients are based in England. So, you know, and I'm obviously a UK solicitor. So, you know, I'm more familiar with the UK courts than any other courts. The ecosystem I was talking about was about abused parents. So if a person is abused, the court system totally ignores that point. So, which makes no sense at all to me. You know, like if a mom has been abused by her husband, he will still get 50% of the child custody.
Mm.
Even when the dad actually abuses their child, he will still get custody, which for me, like, is mind-boggling. Like, you know, how can someone who's hurting their own child be given the right to take care of him or her?
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they say, okay, you know, it's supervised visitation, but still, I mean, the child is already hurt from his dad or her dad, and they have to be forced to, you know, continue seeing them. And a lot of these visitation centers are very depressing. It's like being in a prison. You know, like, it's, you know, you're actually in a closed room and you have an officer sitting with you the whole time. So it's really unpleasant for everyone, not just for the child, obviously for the parent as well. But, you know, like, what kind of upbringing is that going to be? You know, it's a horrible way of seeing your child, and also a horrible way of the child seeing their parents. So this was where I was coming from, because I know a lot of clients who came from abusive relationships, and they were forced to share their custody with their, you know, ex-husband. And it's just a very unfair system.
Yeah. But the abuse can go both ways, right? Like, so the same of laws course, apply. Like, so if let's say a woman was doing that, she still gets 50%, just like the guy would, right?
I mean, 50% is the starting point,
Sure.
I would say maybe 90% of the cases, you know, fall on that.
On that, yeah.
It's very rare. It's very rare that someone gets more than 50%. But there are exceptions.
Yeah. No, of course. And that's a very strange law that is not factored into account. That.
Yeah, and another point I just remembered is that, like, sometimes when one parent earns a lot more than the other parents, that imbalance in financial earnings is not reflected in how the financial settlement is drawn up.
Really?
So, you know, no, it's not. So that's why getting a good lawyer or getting a good coach is important, because, you know, you need to actually direct the judge to that, you know, because otherwise, you know, like, the going rate right now is like £100 a month for a child, which is, I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. In London, like, what can you buy with £100? You know, it's like not even enough for, you know, diapers if you have a baby, you know, for 1 month.
Yeah.
So the financial settlements are way out of line, and they're not reflecting the real true cost of living.
Yeah.
And on top of that, they're not adjusted to, you know, the higher earning parents in the situation.
Yeah. But is that the case in the States, though? Because I know in the States, I don't know, like, directly, but from what I've read and seen, like, you see these settlements that are like these divorce payouts that are like ridiculous, and it does take that into account. At least it must, for you to get that much money out of it.
Yeah, I mean, my second divorce was in America. So,
oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, but it was a totally different situation, because we did it amicably. So we didn't go to court. So we agreed everything with a mediator behind closed doors, and it was done in a really, friendly manner. So I didn't have to go through that experience to come and tell you what happened. So I'm not sure how it is in America, because I didn't have to go to court. Thank God, I avoided that.
And you always, I think you said once that it's all, if you can, it's always better to settle it out of court and avoid going to court because it can be a very
Hundred
costly and
percent,
traumatic
hundred
experience,
percent,
right?
100%. And you never know what the outcome is going to be. Even if your lawyer tells you, "Oh, you have a really strong case," you can never guarantee that, because at the end of the day, you're dealing with a human being, and the judge can have a bad day or a good day, when he hears your file.
That's true.
So,
That's true.
yeah. So, yeah.
Avoid the courts, guys, whoever's listening. Don't go there.
Exactly.
I wanted to touch on the children aspect a little bit because I guess one of the big challenges with people getting divorced is when there's kids, when there's children involved. You know, if it's just you and a partner, I think it's you and your husband, your wife. It's a lot easier to go through that process together. You know, and I speak from my close friends' experience. So I guess how, and I know age plays a part, like how old are the children? Do they understand? Will they feel it? Will they not? But I guess if I came to you as a parent that is going through a divorce and I have children, what advice would you have to me on how should I like handle that and how should I maybe deliver the message and cope, like get them through this transition period?
I mean, this is part three of my 5-part program that I have, which is also in my book. So I have a whole chapter on that point. The starting point is, how are you going to actually communicate to them that the marriage is breaking down? Like you said, it depends on how old they are, how mature they are. If it's a toddler, then obviously you have to, talk to them in the language that they would understand, in a really, simple language. Like, "Mommy and daddy are not happy together. We are going to be living in different houses, but we want you to make sure that you understand that we both love you. There's nothing that you've done that caused this fact," and that try to bring like the positives from that. So instead of having one house, you can have two houses. You're gonna have two rooms. You can actually help design, your new room. You can pick your favorite colors, or pick your favorite posters, of depending on who their favorite character is. Depending on whether or not the other house will be close by, if they're going to change schools, then you have to also discuss that as well. Let's go and visit different schools to make sure that you're happy with the new school, and will you be making new friends. You will still see daddy, or you still see mommy. So it's just like breaking the news slowly to them. Obviously, if someone is older, like a teenager, they're more mature, and actually most times they were expecting that to happen. No couple, decides to get divorced without the kids feeling it beforehand, because the kids are very, very resilient, and they feel a lot more than we give them credit for. Even babies feel their mother's pain. You can imagine, when you're a toddler, or when you're a teenager, you would know, and you would feel that, that your parents are, not doing very well together. And as a teenager, you'd expect that. So sometimes, they would say, "Well, why did you do this sooner? Why didn't you do this sooner? Like, why did you wait all this time to get divorced?" And like, sometimes the parents would say, "Oh, wow, I didn't expect that reaction from you. I thought you'd be like devastated or really upset." So sometimes we don't give our kids the credit that they deserve, nor do we, nor we undermine like their resilience, because a lot of times people stay in a marriage thinking that they're doing their kids a service, which I completely disagree with. If you are actually miserable in your marriage, there's no way you're doing your kids a service. You're actually doing them a huge disservice because you're giving them a bad role model that it's okay to live in a, you know, unhappy, miserable, toxic relationship because that's what my parents did, you know, and that's not how it should be. You know, if you are really, if you feel like there's no way out to fix the marriage, then divorce is the best way, the best solution for everyone, not just for the parents, but also for the kids.
Mm.
Because if you grew up in a toxic family, it will only rub on you when you become married yourself, you know, because this is how you were raised. So you think this is normal.
Yeah.
So, you know, you will just continue following what your parents showed you in their marriage. So this is normal. It's normal for a man to shout at his wife. Or it's normal for a mom to, you know, to, I don't know, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I get you.
Whatever wrong things happen in the marriage, the kids can think that this is how things are done. This is how it is.
Yeah.
So
I think that's a, I think that's really interesting how you said that kids are more perceptive than we think they are. No matter, you know, no matter the age. And it's funny that you said, like, when, if they're older and like teenagers, you see, like, mom, and you can see it, you can understand it, you know, besides feeling it, you know. So I get how it wouldn't come as a shock, you know, to a teenager, but maybe when you're younger it can still feel that way. So I think what you said about breaking it down slowly, making sure it's not, like, they understand it's not their fault, and kind of showing the silver lining of this, of, you, like you're saying, oh, let's, like, the new schools, which one do you like, you know, your new house, mm-hmm. your new, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's really, really good advice.
Yeah.
I just have a few more questions, Zamar, that I wanted to touch on. So I guess, so I know you've done your book, From Breakup to Empowerment. I unfortunately wasn't able to get a copy in time for this podcast, but I want to take a look at it for sure. I guess I know that you said there's 5 steps. So the third one is what we kind of just talked about, which is how to, you know, the coping, you know, with the children and so on. Could you just walk us through what those five steps are real quick?
So I'll show you a picture of it. So the first step, like I mentioned before, is the mindset. So
okay.
The mindset is the most important part of the whole process, because if you don't actually work on that, on your mindset, then whatever happens afterwards will fizzle out, you know.
Yeah.
Because so that's the first one. Mindset is also, it also involves your emotions. So it's not just about how you think, but also how you feel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's the first part. The second one is about financial. So it's about getting all your expenses and your income statements in order. Ideally, both of you should do it together as a team, like, you know, with, and you need evidence as well. So, like, bank statements or pay slips. If you have properties, also you need, like, mortgage statements, or, you know, so, but everything has to be filed,
yeah,
and presented to either your lawyer or your mediator, depending on what route you're taking. And from that, then you can decide, like, what is a fair settlement figure, you know, that, you know, one party will get from the other party, and also how much child allowance they will get, you know. So the financial part is step two. Step three is dealing with the children's emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I mentioned before, step four is the legal matters. So whether or not you want to go down the court route, which is obviously, for me, it's like the last resort, or you can do it yourself. I mean, some couples, you know, divorce online. You can do that in England. I don't know if you can do that
online.
In Dubai, but
Oh, really?
You can do it online.
No, I had no idea. No.
Yeah, you can do it online. But Obviously, if you do it online, you need to get legal advice.
Yeah, of course.
Because
yeah.
if you fill in the forms wrong, it will get rejected.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's missing parts, or if whatever you write is not reasonable, the judge will not accept it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not as simple as it seems.
Yeah.
You need some guidance.
For sure.
So yeah, you could either do it online yourself, you could do it through mediation, you could do it through something called collaborative divorce. So that means that each party has their own lawyer, but they're working together as a team. They're not antagonizing each other, which is what happens in most court cases.
Yeah.
So it's like a mixture between mediation and going to court. But the only difference is that you actually know what your legal rights are from your lawyer.
Yeah.
Mediation, you will not be given that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mediation is all about finding a common ground. But in terms of your legal rights, you need to get legal advice on that.
Yeah.
So and the last step is again is linked to mindset, but it's more about life after your divorce. So okay, you got divorced, you got your paper. Now what? You know, a lot of times people get divorced and they think, you know, automatically life will, you know, will just bounce back to normal. But it's not. It doesn't happen that way. You know, obviously, when you go through a divorce, it's like you're going through a grieving process.
Yeah, of course.
And there's different stages of grief that you go through. And some people, after getting their divorce, they become depressed because you know they're focused on getting the divorce, but they haven't actually thought about, okay, once I get the divorce, how will my life look like? So if you don't have that that support, then it's almost like you're reliving the whole divorce again because you know you're not prepared. So I help my clients, you know, design the life that they want after divorce, even before they start their divorce. So, you know, it's like, you know, they have a roadmap and you know, like as long as they're following, you know, the various steps that they need to achieve, once they get divorced, then it'll be much simpler to bounce back and continue on from, you know, where they left off and create a better life that they had before the divorce happened.
Yeah. I love those. I really like how you've structured, you know, those steps. I think, like you said, starting with mindset is the most important, and that mindset applies to, you know, anything, any field,
everything.
Yeah. I think one thing I think I maybe underestimated or didn't give enough attention to before our conversation today was the significance of finances in terms of like, because you one of the things you said was like you'd be surprised how many times that's like the biggest issue. So I'm like, ah, okay, maybe, you know, maybe that needs to be more like higher on the, I don't know, priority, or I don't know, I think I need to give it maybe more attention than I thought I would have needed to. So that's really good. Three, children, I totally get where you're coming from. I don't have any at the moment, so until then, to be revisited. For the legal matters, yeah, I didn't even know that there were so many different ways you can do it. I thought you always had to like go to like lawyers, had to get involved, and it had to be messy, and so I never knew it could be done in a very amicable way without, you know, all that noise and all that stress and all that additional cost and, you know, all that emotion.
Yeah, and I mean, as a lawyer, you know, obviously I understand the, you know, how they actually operate, and I know that, you know, lawyers work on an hourly basis, so it's in their interest
to
prolong the process,
mm-hmm.
not to minimize it and find a solution right away, because otherwise they're cutting into their income.
Yeah.
So that defeats the whole purpose of hiring lawyers. You know, I mean, you want to get through the divorce as quickly as you can, and as cheaply as you can. But if you go down the court route, you will never achieve that.
Yeah.
You know, and like, you know, getting a court hearing in this country can take months and months to get a hearing date. So, you know, it's, you know, that's why it takes a very long time to get a divorce through the court system.
Yeah. And I think you made a very good point about, you know, it's not in your interest as if you're a divorce lawyer to do that if it's based on an hourly rate. No, I totally get that.
Yeah, I mean, the divorce lawyers try to find, you know, ways of getting the best outcome for the client, but also they also try to find ways of untangling as many problems that they can find to prolong the process. Because otherwise, their income would be much more minimal than what they could earn.
No, for sure. I totally understand that, but I think that out of all the steps, because those are very, I think, they're very logical, they're very sequential, which I like. It kind of gives you a roadmap of how to think about, you know, how to go through the process. But I think the most important one, without a doubt, at least for me, was the last thing you said, is because when you're going through, you know, because I've lived through this with a friend of mine. I think when you're going through the divorce, you're so consumed by it. It's very, you know, stressful. You're not even thinking about what's happening after. You're just trying to get to this end goal of you're closing this chapter so you can start, move on and start a new life. But you don't, maybe, like, what if you haven't thought about what that is? It's kind of like, you know, when they say, you know, you've reached like your ultimate goal, then you kind of sit there like, okay, now what? You haven't thought about what's after, you know, what's next. So I think that last one is super, super important.
And most people forget about that because they think naturally everything will fall into place, but that's not what happens, you know.
Exactly. No, I totally agree, and I think history has proven that. Zamar, I just have three more questions for you. Just to summarize our conversation for the day of everything we've talked about, if you had to give maybe one or two of what are the biggest misconceptions people have when it comes to marriage and divorce, what would you say?
In terms of divorce, I would say that it's not the end of the world if you need to get divorced, you know, for the right reasons. And actually getting a divorce could be a blessing in disguise. It's been, because, you know, that happened to me twice. So I'm living proof of that. In terms of marriage, my advice is take your time before you actually marry someone. Make sure that you both know each other very well. If you see any red flags, don't ignore them, you know, deal with them right away, because red flags, especially before you get married, are signs that, you know, you need to make sure that you are happy and you can actually with that person who has this red flag.
Yeah. I love those. I think, you know, they speak volumes about a lot of the things that even myself, and I think not only me, but a lot of people have, like, the misconceptions we have about marriage and divorce. So thank you for that. For my last two questions, Amar, these are questions I ask all of my guests. So, and everyone has a different answer, so I'm curious. So the first one is, looking back at, you know, your life, your career, either personally or professionally, if I asked you, what are you most proud of for yourself, what would you say?
Personally, I would say it's having my two daughters. I mean, they're everything to me. Professionally, it's hard to say because I have so many professions. I actually didn't mention that I also do property investment, so that's my third.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. So
man of business,
you're busy all the time, I'm guessing. You must be.
I am. But I love it. I love everything that I do.
That's awesome.
I'm proud of everything that I'm doing.
Yeah. No, and it's really beautiful to hear. And for my last question, Zamar, what is the message that you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
The message I'd like to say is that you can turn your mess into power. So, you know, everything can be turned into a positive, no matter how bad it is.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And I think that is a...
By the way, I forgot to mention about my cancer. So.
Oh no, we didn't touch. Yeah. We didn't touch on that.
It's okay.
For part two, we'll come back to that on part two.
Sure.
Awesome. Zamar, I wanted to say thank you so much for your time today and for coming on the show. I've absolutely loved this conversation. I've personally learned so much from it. You know, my head just thinking about 20 million things that, like, you've said, and now I'm like thinking, like, okay, I need to think about that and this and that. No, but it's a good thing because I'm more aware of things now. So thank you for me personally, and I think a lot of people listening to this podcast who are either married, getting married, or have been divorced, there's so much value that they can get from this and learning from your experience. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure to be on your show, and you're doing a great job. So I'm very proud of you. And keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much for the kind words. I really appreciate it. If Zamar, if anyone wants to connect with you, reach out, get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, I was saying I'm on Facebook, and also my book is on Amazon if anyone wants to buy it. And lastly, I have a website. So it's zamardajanicoaching.com.
Okay. Perfect. Guys, you heard it here first. If you're looking to read her book or work with Zamar or just, you know, hear her story and more, check out, you know, Facebook and check out her her website at zamardajanicoaching.com. As always, guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Zamar, again, for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. And as always, guys, hope it helps. Peace.